Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world, it's Janine Vosper here. Welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today I have Lee Clothier, and she is a financial empowerment coach. So listen up, if you've got issues around money, this is going to be such an important interview. She is a social entrepreneur and a creator of Mindful Wealth. She takes a transformative approach that blends financial literacy with somatic, interesting word, we're going to bring that up in discussion, energetic and spiritual tools to help conscious women reclaim their power with money. With over 22 years experience spanning finances, wellness, business, mindset and coaching, Lee has supported hundreds of creatives, healers and purpose-driven women to rewrite limiting market money stories, regulate their nervous systems and build sustainable wealth in deep alignment with their soul. She is the CEO of Healed Tribe, a youth mental health charity in Australia. I'm definitely going to find a little bit more about that as well. And visionary behind several creative ventures, including an upcoming book, The Sacred Middle, and the Intently Habit Tracking app. Oh, I like that. Intently. That's the name of the app, Lee.
Yes, it is.
Oh, cool. That could have a lot of connotations on that, can't it? I can imagine it does too. Lee believes that wealth is not just a number in the bank, it's a state of being. Through her work, she invites women to heal generational patterns and expand their safety and capacity to receive and take up space in their full financial power. Welcome, Lee. It's so great to have you on.
Hi, Janine. Thanks for having me. I'm really pleased to be chatting with you today.
I love all of that intro because what's important for me, it's not just about finances, it's about blending that with the person that you are and what works for you and what, you know, what nourishes your soul. So well done with that. That's cool. All right, those things that I commented on, what does somatic mean?
Somatic is body-based. So it's the soma, it's the body, so it's about how we feel in our body, and it's using practices to basically connect our body with our mind and make sure that we are in alignment. So if we are using money, which we do on a daily basis, moment by moment basis, we will notice quite often that our body is giving us signals as to how our relationship with money is at that moment in time. So if we're about to spend money, our heart might be pounding, we might start sweating, if we're about to make a money decision, we might struggle to get the voice out when we're trying to communicate about money. We might tremble. So our body is very important in understanding our relationship with money. And then we can use practices, somatic practices, to help us calm down and make wiser decisions and choices.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that just makes a whole lot of sense because, and something popped up when I was reading your bio, because I've done a lot of energy work and worked with a lot of energy people over the years, and this is years ago, and I know the mindset's changed around it now, but has it? A lot of energy working people go, well, you can't make money, you know, you have to give back. It's not, it blew me away. I just, because I'm very much of the more money I make, the more people I can help, so that's it, I'm done. But that it was, they had a real issue with it. It was strong.
It's a very common archetypal wounding, what I call. So when we look at money, there's actually eight archetypes that will play out in our relationship with money. Two of them are very empowering, the warrior and the magician. The other six can be quite disempowering if they're in control of our relationship with money. So remembering that an archetype is not our personality, it's a way that we show up with money. Mm-hmm. So it's our habits, our beliefs, and our behaviors with it. And that particular archetype is often referred to as the creator artist. So anyone who has spiritual beliefs, are artistic, consider themselves to be a healer or a musician or anything in that field, quite often has an either-or approach with money. I can either do what I want to do or I can make money. And by having that mindset, it puts this disconnect between the ability to hold and receive or even bring in wealth, because for some reason in their mindset, they have this belief that it dilutes their practice or dilutes their service. And there's a lot of, let's just call it spiritual and religious and societal conditioning that has created that messaging for us. And that messaging is very outdated, because if you are here to be of service in the world and share your gifts, then you need to be fully resourced in order to be able to do that. Otherwise, we're depleting ourselves, and we can't give from an empty cup. We just can't do it. It's very, very limited in terms of our capacity to give. So if we want to really do the work that we came here to do and be of service, then we need to fill that cup so it's overflowing, and then give that overflow, that excess out to the world. Like you said, the more money you have, the more generous you can be.
Absolutely.
So that's a piece that I'm really on a mission to try and help more people understand, is it's not an either-or decision. It's actually a this and this work together.
That's so incredibly important to be able to recognize exactly that. And it sort of makes it just makes so much sense to for, well, it does for me, but I know that's, as you said, we're different archetypes, and archetypes isn't just about money, it's about everything that you do in life as well. And it's the there was one point that particular that you mentioned. I usually take notes, and I was trying to stop myself sneezing, so I didn't take a note when you were talking there. It'll come back to me. It just, and I went, that's exactly right. That's what I have seen so many times, is that, and that's where then a lot of women who have gone into some sort of healing or creative field, particularly, not always, they can be doing other work. A lot of their business is still just a hobby. It's not actually a viable business.
Absolutely. And that is often us keeping ourselves safe by keeping ourselves small. So when we have that kind of archetype too, it's the innocent archetype playing out, or the one that's always overgiving and overgenerous of their time, their energy, self-sacrificing, then that's the martyr archetype that plays out with women very often. So the ones that I often see is the creator artist, the martyr, and the innocent archetypes in combination, which keeps people fairly disempowered when it comes to their relationship with money.
I can imagine. Is that along the lines of Enneagrams as well, the archetypes, or is that
Yeah,
something different as
all
well?
of these systems work in our relationship with money, because how we do money is how we do everything in life. So if you look at relationship styles, and you might have heard of secure attachment, avoidant attachment, anxious attachment, we can look at ourselves in our relationship with money, because we're in a relationship with it for our whole lives, and we can consider, are we securely attached to money? Or are we anxious with money, or are we avoidant with money? If we look at our Enneagrams, we can see that will definitely play out in our relationship with money. So starting to understand that it's more than numbers. Our relationship with money is largely to do with how we feel about ourselves, so our self-concept and our self-worth, and then how we manage our habits, thoughts, and behaviors with money. Because money on its own works very well. What happens is when we get involved with our habits, our beliefs, our limitations, it gets a little bit complicated, because money is highly emotional.
It certainly is, and I know in relationships it's probably one of the things that people argue about more than anything else. And
Correct.
considering what you're saying about the different archetypes, then how, a couple's coming together with completely different money, I don't want to say issues, but money responses or the energy they put in towards money, then it's going to definitely cause conflict.
Money issues are the leading cause of stress globally. They're also the leading cause of divorce, citing as money financial issues. It's really important for us to understand that when opposites attract, generally, then usually you'll have opposites with money as well. It's not always the case, but the majority of the time you'll have a spender and a saver, or
Right.
someone who's really careful and someone who's more carefree, or someone who is really involved and someone who just doesn't want to have
That's
anything to
my
do
husband and I. He
with it.
just he if oh, the amount of things that we've gone to do over the years, buy an investment property, and he doesn't sleep for a week. So, I just figure it's not worth it. It's just not worth that stress that he's going through to do certain things. And after 45 years, sort of learned what the best way to do it is, just do it myself.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. I do a lot of couples coaching. I call it on the same page. And that's where we get on the same page with our finances and we understand that we both have values and we both have priorities and we both have different ways of showing up with money. It both are equally important. So if someone is very security conscious or very risk averse and the other is a little bit more freedom focused and carefree, they're generally the way these are values that they have. So we need to honor that, but also come in compromise in the middle so that we can move forward together as a team. Otherwise, we're always operating separately, and it's really hard to make those turn those plan those dreams into plans and make them manifest because we're just not operating on the same page.
Absolutely. I have had to pr provide a lot of supporting material, when it comes to things that to help him just feel more comfortable with the decisions. And it just works well. He doesn't know anything about things. He just prefers that, which
He
is really
prefers. So
interesting.
he would have a more of an avoidant
Oh,
relationship.
very, very much avoidance. But if anything happened to me, then, there's some friends have offered to come and help him use online things like
I see that often. I see that often.
that. It's also the era he is as well, when especially when it comes. The other day I had a discussion. Well, I'll have a passbook and I'll take it to the bank and I'll do it that way. Well, no, that's unfortunately not how things happen now. So
Bank has even got someone in it these days. There's quite often that they're unmanned.
absolutely. So I know with your beliefs around money, you talk about money as energy. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, money is a resource and it's a tool that we use in life to facilitate the things that we desire and need. Now, money itself is not necessarily valuable. But we've assigned the value to it. So we've taken this piece of paper and these coins, and these days the numbers in the bank account, because we don't even really use physical money anymore. And we have determined it to be value. We've assigned the value to it. Just the same way that money is not good or bad, it's neutral. And then if it's the intention that I put behind the use of money, that makes it so. So there's an old saying that for the love of money, money is the root of all evil. I'm sure you've heard that. And the actual quote goes, for the love of money is the root of all evil. So in other words, greed and what money can bring out in people is what creates the evil.
Right.
There is a real misconception that money, we've kind of given money this entity and saying money's bad or money's this. Money is neutral. It's just a tool and a mechanism for us to use. If we are generous and we are kind-hearted and if we have good intentions, then guess what? The more money that comes into our space, the more that we can do with it, the more good that we can do in the world. If we are greedy and self-serving and selfish, then of course, the more money that comes into our world, we assign and connect that intention to that money. So I think if we can unravel this concept of what money truly is and see it as a resource and get rid of it, it's bad or it's negative, especially for healers. Or anyone in the energetic space, and see it as this beautiful tool to facilitate good in the world, well-being, health, wealth, happiness. It can do a lot of things for us.
Yes, and that's something that I've always been part of my beliefs. Sorry, I thought I turned my phone off, and I obviously hadn't. The yeah is as I said, we're using money, but and I think we talked about this the other day when we're exchanging things for money. I've always been in the mindset that if I am going to buy something, am I prepared to exchange a certain amount of time or work for it? And that way I can justify it or not justify it, spending the money. But not a lot of people do that. They spend without the thought to how they get it. in the first place, don't they?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that most of us don't pay much attention to our relationship with money, and we don't give it the respect that it actually needs, because this is the tool that facilitates things like a roof over our head, the clothes that we wear, the food that we eat, the opportunities that we can take. And that's what I really see what being in relationship and good relationship with money creates for us: freedom and opportunities. And then the more that we can understand that if we pay attention to that, it's so empowering. It's so exciting to see what can unfold when we have a really healthy relationship with it. But if we're just ignoring it and expecting it to show up for us, or stressing about it, but then burying our heads in the sand, then it's we need to realize that we are the ones that need to take control. And unfortunately for women, we grew up with these fairy tale stories about not worrying our pretty little heads because Prince Charming was going to ride in and save us, and we wouldn't have to worry, and we'd rush off into the sunset. Now, that system is so outdated because they were written before women could even have bank accounts, or before women could even necessarily vote. And most women that I'm working with and see want to be financially independent, even in relationship, because that gives them choices, it gives them power, it gives them stability. And then you can contribute it any way you like. It doesn't have to be equal with your partner, whoever your partner is. It just means that you can stand independently and not be in codependent relationships or stuck in a relationship because you can't move because of your financial situation, or disempowered and not able to pursue the dreams that you really have.
No, and we bring those, as you said, those relationships. Where does our beliefs come from? That's,
So this is fascinating. I will say generations ago. So the beliefs that we hold around money come from a number of places. Firstly, our parents, obviously, our family environment. Then we have our society that we're in, and that also may be religion if we have strong religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs. Then we have our peers that will also be influences. And then we have things like social media and back in the day, TV and radio and print. And so beliefs come from whole layers of conditioning, and sometimes even like generations and generations of beliefs have been passed down to us, both societally and collectively. So it's really interesting to understand that almost 90% of our relationship with money is held on a subconscious basis below the surface. So we're not even thinking about how are these beliefs impacting us. They're just running like a little script underneath the surface, under the surface. We're working on autopilot, just doing what we've always done. But it's really until we actually bring them up to the surface and look at them with some compassion and awareness and go, does this belief actually even serve me? Do I want to continue with this belief? Because if I have a belief, for example, that money doesn't grow on trees, or that I have to work hard to earn money, then the job of my brain is to go out and recreate that as a reality. So every experience I'm going to have means it's going to prove that particular belief for me. So why not have some really empowering beliefs underneath the surface rather than the ones that are keeping us stuck and uncomfortable?
Yes, those statements like money doesn't grow on trees or you have to work hard for your money. I mean, I grew up with those, and it's just, and it's something that it's very easily said to children when they're demanding or wanting to spend things that money isn't available for that particular project, or parents choose not to do that as they can. And they, yeah, that often the statement comes up, money doesn't grow on trees. It's,
Yeah.
yeah. And it does,
Language is very
loads it.
powerful. It really is important to be aware of the language that we're using with ourselves, but then also with the people around us. And, I grew up in a family of one of four, and mum and dad were really smart with their money. They didn't have a lot of it, but they were really goal-oriented and, looking at paying off their mortgage, and we had an investment property, and they were doing really well with their money. But as a child, I didn't understand that. All I heard was, we can't afford it, or no. And so I internalized this concept of scarcity, even though I had a fully abundant childhood of holidays, and we had a boat, and like it's not rational, because, but what I heard when it was constant no was, there's not enough. There's not enough. Now, understanding that language is important. I encourage anyone with young children to reframe that from a no to it's not a priority. We're working towards something else. We're using that money to cr do something else because that gives context. And then a child in their little brain that's not that rational can understand and learn, oh, it's not because I'm not worthy or it's not because there's not enough money. It's because mum and dad are working towards something that's really important to them as a family. Language is so important, but we're not taught this.
Yes, and then how a child then considers that, rationalizes it, and then s still wants what they want, which is
Yeah,
interesting, but at least
they
it's,
will. And but
yeah.
that's also about teaching children and involving them in the process of the family priorities. So what does a house bring to us? It brings stability and it brings us a home and it brings us a place where we can all be together, belonging. And then understanding children to work towards the things that they desire and not necessarily having every single want that they want in the world. You know,
No.
I quite often talk about adding another word in that vocabulary. So we have wants and we have needs. And then why not have a whole lot of likes? So we can start just saying, I like that. I like that. Just because you like it doesn't mean you need it or necessarily want it, but you can like it.
Yeah, no, that makes a whole lot of sense. And I know my generation did grow up with counting the money more so because there was less of it. There was less opportunity. Well, there weren't credit cards. If you didn't have the money, you couldn't buy it. That was end of story. And for me personally, I remember because you used to get paid in cash in pay packets, and splitting up the cash into envelopes so that this envelope was for the year's insurance, and you'd put a percentage away each week. And this was for car payment, or this was for a house payment. The money was always there to make the payment because we didn't do bank transfers. We had to pay things with money that we actually had. And I really truly believe that gives you a better relationship with money because you can physically see it. And I'm saddened to see people now with a lot of debt and a lot of, a debt that I just can't imagine having, that they don't have that same sort of realization of what money is worth.
Yeah, and it is a thing. It's called the money disconnect because we are disconnected from the physicality of money. We're not using it. It's not tangible for us. So it kind of feels a bit abstract. It's, you know, when we look in an account, it appears and it goes, and we're not spending enough time to create a mindful relationship with it. And that makes it more difficult to manage unless you bring some intention to it and you start to give every dollar a purpose and you start to budget in that same way by breaking things up and managing it really carefully. The other thing with debt is that it's very easy for people to get into debt given the desire to live in
Access.
the moment. The access to it is freely there. And then there's, you need this. You know, we get 6,000 media messages a day telling us we need more. We're not good enough. We're not pretty enough. We need to buy this and we'll be happy. All of those concepts. What has been helpful for a lot of clients that I work with is, you know, slowing down the process. So spending is often highly emotional, driven from our emotions, not our logic. It's particularly impulse spending. So if we're scrolling or if we're at the checkout or something, I often say just slow down, take a breath. And by taking a breath, we give our logic an opportunity to catch up with the emotion that we're experiencing. So if we're 7 seconds quicker in emotional decisions than we are in logic, take a couple of breaths and then ask yourself, would future Lee be happy with me purchasing this right now, particularly if I'm going to be using debt? Because future Lee has to pay that debt off. Is she really going to be happy with the fact that you're buying this dress or these shoes or this night out or this trip? Or is she going to want to have the freedom to be able to spend money in that time rather than paying off past purchasing decisions? It's about understanding that debt is really just past purchasing decisions that you're paying off today for what you enjoyed yesterday.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, and it would be a great realization. As also, I so what's your story? I read all about you, but starting the charity, and why do you do money, Lee?
That's a really good question. I think I do money for a whole lot of reasons. I started in a career in financial planning, not really knowing what financial planning even was. I got a job in an office as a junior, and then they saw some potential in me and offered to fund my education. I'd already done business management, but they had a degree in that. And then they said, okay, I think you'd be a great financial planner. We need more women. I was only 20 years old, so I was very young. And I studied full time and worked full time until I became a qualified financial advisor. So I was fully qualified around 24 and a half. And then I started working in financial advice as a junior advisor and worked my way up until I owned and opened my own financial planning practice when I was 28. I really enjoyed the strategies and the technicality of financial planning. I'm a numbers person, so it came quite easily for me. However, I saw a huge gap in the way that financial planning was delivered. It was mostly delivered to men by men. The language was very masculine. The way it was delivered was very uninspiring. And I was thinking, well, I'm a creative person. I like color. I like to create. I'm in the healing space. I'd studied yoga at that stage. Why is it like this? Why does it have to be like this? So I started asking why we couldn't bring more well-being into our relationship with money and the way we communicated it. And I even started to run some yoga classes where we started talking about money and we started talking about wealth and well-being and what was the purpose of money. And those really started to take off beautifully. And it got me realizing that whilst financial planning is extremely important, there is a big step in between seeking financial planning, and that's understanding your relationship with money. And that comes through education, and it comes through life skills, and it comes through understanding what we value and who we are as an individual. But if I go to a financial planner and I don't know any of that about myself, I end up with a plan for my money that I'm really not connected to, and I really don't have any kind of attachment to it because it's this abstract, someone else is looking after my money. So I really felt that there was a big gap in the market back, and this was 2014, 2015. So I went and studied behavioral psychology of our relationship with money, and I started s studying other modalities, energy healing. I became a certified wellness coach. I looked at things like neuroscience and somatics and nervous system regulation and emotional regulation, and realized that the relationship with money is just it's so critical. It's so important. It's like a thread throughout our daily lives, and if we're not paying attention to it, it impacts every other aspect, our relationships, our health, our sense of worth, the ability to pursue our dreams or not. So I got onto this huge kind of purpose. It became my purpose. This isn't my career, it's my purpose to support women to really have a healthy relationship with it, because it's about creating life. It's not about looking at finances.
Absolutely. So that, I mean, that's been quite a journey. You're obviously a seeker of knowledge.
Yes, I
It's, it
am.
would be your archetype. What do they call that when people just constantly
I don't know, but that's me from, as a child, I used to go to the library and just sit there and get out all the books, read all the books, and just wanted to learn more. I loved social sciences. I loved learning about history and culture and people. And yeah, I do. I think that knowledge is so important. But then I also realized through my career that personally, I had a lot of knowledge about finance, but was I applying that knowledge to my own situation? I was applying it to everybody else's relationship, but I wasn't necessarily applying it to myself. So often, you hear a lot of financial planners or coaches or mentors who present themselves as experts. Now, I'm not an expert. I've just invested a lot of time and energy in learning about our relationship with money. No one is an expert in your relationship with money but you. And it's really
Interesting
important
point.
to know that no one really knows you better than you. So I have spent a lot of time trying to improve my own relationship with money, because I feel like when we teach from a place of experience, embodied experience, it's a lot more authentic. And I don't want to be an expert because I'm not an expert on anyone else's life, just my own.
Yeah, and that's an extremely good point. It's particularly about this subject and how it works, particularly for us. How do people change their beliefs around money?
Yeah. So the process is beautifully inspiring and empowering. So the first thing is we need to create awareness. So we can't change what we don't know. So the first step is just going deep into, I kind of like, it's like a detective work. Let's get really curious about what's going on underneath the surface. We look at the money story, we look at the upbringing, the patterns, the behaviors, the experiences we've had with money. And we kind of bring them all up to the surface, and then we create a blueprint around what's going on. When we have that blueprint, then we can look at, well, what's serving us well and what's not serving us so well. And we can make a plan to shift those. Now, beliefs can be a little bit hard to shift. They just take time because they've been ingrained for our whole lives, generally. So once we've created a new one that we want to replace from the old one, it's about repetition, and it's about choosing to think, feel, and act in the new way versus the old way.
Yeah, that order, think, feel, and then act rather than feel and then think. Yes.
Feel, act, and then think afterwards.
Yeah, was that a good idea or not? No. Okay. So I can imagine, I know when even just on, pulling people's stories when I'm working with them, that takes a considerable work because it's again, as you said, it's the essence of someone. It's the story under the story. It's not what people often thinking is their money story as well.
No, it's not. And I would say 99% of the time, it's not what you're thinking. And there's a lot of sort of aha moments and epiphanies that happen that we can then see the threads around why we've made the decisions or created the behaviors we have. And they are driven by our beliefs, which are driven largely by wanting to belong, wanting to fit in, wanting to make sure that we're lovable and that we're enough. And so when we come down to the root cause of most of our problems with money, if you want to call them problems, it comes down to just human condition.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking, because working with a lot of women, it's surprising. I market to women, but I have mostly male clients, which is really interesting because men will tend to go, I need the service, I'm prepared to invest. Whereas women, and this is, and it's not, I'm generalizing here, but I've found over, 30 years of doing this, women will go, well, the kids need new shoes and they've got a trip to Europe planned, although I've never, they've never been to Europe themselves, but there's some, I can't really afford that few hundred dollars to invest in myself. I will put it aside. And it was something I re and put it aside for the family. And there's something that I was reading the other day that there's two ways that women value themselves, their highest priority on how they value themselves. And one is what other women, how they look is one, but the other one is what other people think of their parenting style. So it's no wonder, whereas men, their number one is how they support their family. So that hence why they'll go, if this will help me improve and earn more money, sure, I will spend the money on this particular need. Whereas women, that's a different priority. It was a real eye-opener for me because it relates to everything that we're talking about too, is it's a different
Absolutely. And it's
priority.
an archetype. It's the martyr archetype. So women are caregivers and they play that primary role, either for children or aging parents. It generally falls, not always, but generally falls on a woman to be the main caregiver. And when she's the main caregiver, then she places herself last. And so it's very often that investing in myself seems selfish because there's all these other people and things that need my time, energy, and money. But understanding that we are the investment in ourselves is the best investment you will ever make, particularly for a woman around her relationship with money, because that then, how did the children learn? They're going to learn through what they witness at home. So if you look after your own finances and change your relationship with money, you're actually setting your children up for this, for a similar positive future.
Yes, and so important. And the word that I was trying to think of before that you brought up was the word lack. It just popped into my head because you can't make decisions when you're in a space of lack. And I'm just putting one of my sales programs together, and that's That's what I talk about all the time. And whether it's money or health or wellness, mental health, whatever it is, you can't make great decisions when you're in a situation of lack. And it's so important to fill your own cup first. It's absolute priority. And I've tried to do that all the way through my life. And my son came and was out for a couple of years, living out, and then came home and needed somewhere safe to be, and also needed some debts covered at the time, which is an amazing man now, and he's paid back everything. But I had the resources to do that. I had the emotional capacity to assist him when he needed it, and also the financial capacity to do that. And it's just what, if I didn't have that, it would have been a completely different end of situation for him.
Yeah, beautiful. It's incredible to hear. These kind of things we need more women to speak up about because we are taught in society that it is selfish to put the energy on ourselves. Now, there's again, this is where I'm so strong about language. There is a difference between being centered in myself and supporting myself so that I can go and support other people versus being selfish, where it's all about me and only me and it's all that I ever do. So I think if we can separate it and say it's not selfish for me to put the energy and invest in myself, it's me being centered in myself, self-centered, so that I can then help and grow and be strong and that resourced capacity to support the people that I love the most in a sustainable way. Otherwise, we're constantly depleting ourselves and then we have nothing left to give. I see it, women in burnout, women struggling with health, women left with no money or no future because they're like, well, what do I do now? I've got nothing left. I've given it all away. And that's not sustainable.
No, and it's that people pleasing as well. So that's the giveaway of time and energy and sometimes resources, but it usually is time and energy. And it's cultural too, Lee, isn't it? Very much
It's
so.
so cultural. And I work with a lot of archetypes of the martyr because that's mostly what women are. And one of the ways that we can, like, just to give some practical support for anyone who has this archetype or identifies with it, is that it's all about setting boundaries. Now, boundaries are hard to set when we don't know what we truly value. Understanding that we can give to anything, but not everyone. So there's a difference. And when we get really clear on what we value, and I often talk about doing an audit on our generosity, on our giving. And that's looking at how am I currently spending my time, energy, and money, resources? How am I giving them away out there to the world? And then does that align with my values? Do I want to start that? Do I want to stop that? Do I want to continue that? Once we have a giving plan on how am I going to be strategic or intentional about my giving out there in the world. Like, I have X amount of money I want to give to these people every year, and I have X amount of free time that I want to give to these charities or these individuals or my children, for example. It makes saying no a little bit easier because when someone says to you, "Can you help me?" you can say, "Well, actually, I'm giving in a really aligned way, and I don't have any capacity to give any more right now."
Yes, and that's a great no. It's not feeling like I'm letting someone down because you're already doing it. And yeah, that's even with charities. I have a set amount that I donate every month to different charities. And one of the charities, I felt they were starting to become very misaligned with things that I valued. So I stopped that charity and then filled it with other ones that I felt were more aligned. And that's the same with time. Lee, I am on so many committees, and just it's just what I it's what I do because I'm an organizer, and it's easy for me to step in, and I'm great at delegating as well, giving a people opportunity to step up because they do what they're great at. And I'm traveling in for a long period of time in 26, so I've had to step back from all of these and now mentoring people into roles, which is what I've always done anyway. But it's a quite a different space of my time. It's a very different place to be. But that time giving was very what's the word? It was determined. It wasn't just giving it away. It was, I'm prepared to do this. And I'm happy to do this. It's never a should for me. If it comes,
Giving
if
more
something's
play
a
to
should, then
joy.
I just stop doing it.
It's a good question, and that's like coming from a question of ourselves. Am I giving this from a place of desire or from what's that word that I wanted to say? Obligation.
Obligation.
Because giving from a place of obligation just necessitates the need for us to look and question, is this truly what I want to be doing with my time, energy, and money? Because the person that we're usually not trying to disappoint, and it's also learning different ways to say no. A little while ago, I saw a beautiful post somewhere, and you might be able to Google it, around like 50 different ways to say no when you can't actually say no, the word. No,
Oh,
it's only
definitely
two
going to
letters, and
Google
it's one of the hardest
that
words to say. So practicing different ways, like thank you for the opportunity, or we can use different languaging to express ourselves and not feel that guilt until we can comfortably get to the point one day and say, actually, no, thank you.
And for someone who puts their hand up all the time to help out, being able to say no, it's okay, I can do that. I probably have needed an excuse behind it. We'll be traveling, we'll be away. So it's
Understandable.
whatever works, whatever works. But I remember years ago I was running a school fete again, as I did, and I asked this lady to assist with something, and she it was the best no I've ever had. And she said, "Oh, Janine, thank you for thinking that I could actually take on that role. I'm really honored. At the moment, I've got a lot of other time commitments, so I won't be able to do it, but you really do honor me by asking me." And then just, end of the conversation, I said, "I'm thinking, I think she said no." It was beautiful, and it was something that I learned from that you can do very generous no's as
Yeah,
well.
the art of saying no. I think it's a real skill that we can learn and would support us all going forward.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up, there's your charity, Youth Mental Health Charity. Tell me a little bit about that.
So this is not, I'm fortunate enough to be in the CEO role, but the founder of the charity, Megan Stray, started Heal Tribe 10 years ago. It's a beautiful youth mental health support charity operating on the Gold Coast, helping young girls aged between 10 and 25 move through some of the really life transitions that are really hard. Things around how do I feel about my body? How's my mental health with stress and school and home environments? Eating disorder support is part of what we do. And then also looking at concepts like supporting young girls through self-harm or suicidal tendencies, big, deep stuff that, we can provide a really safe space, and we offer therapeutic programs for them. So support through things like yoga and mentoring and body-based practices. So they might get a massage, or they might get some kinesiology or some Reiki, and they can come to a safe space and be around other young people and be fully supported in their journey wherever they're at.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's such an important factor, isn't it? And it's because there's so much coming at us in the world every single day, the stresses are more, certainly more international than I ever grew up with. That was anything that was a stress was usually very localized. But now it's taking
Absolutely.
on
And
the
we
world
also had
somewhat.
moments of downtime where we could switch off or be protected from the outside world or what was going on. That is not the case with social media and with accessibility and just the fast-paced nature of everything that's happening so quickly in the world collectively. And then put a young person in the mix with all of their big emotions and not understanding how to regulate their nervous system or how to regulate their emotions or how to use techniques like mindfulness and breath work and yoga to help calm and journaling and things. So it's really a mission to support these young people and give them the tools so that they can manage in this really fast-paced kind of chaotic world that we're in right now.
Yeah, so important. Before we wrap up, not really out of time, actually, it always goes very quickly. I say that every single interview because I just love the beautiful knowledge and skills and information that all of my guests bring. We have three takeaway points that you want people to particularly remember, Lee. What would they be?
I think the first is that you are in a relationship with money, and that relationship is going to be with you till the very end. And like any relationship, it will thrive if you put a little love and care and attention into it. So if it's not showing up the way that you really want it to be at the moment, if you're not loving money and money's not loving you, then I would suggest putting some time, care, and energy into money right now. The second is that you're not bad. No one's bad with money. There's no such thing as being bad with money. Now, a lot of us weren't taught much about managing money, but that's not an excuse. We can definitely improve that. And we can learn ways to support our system. So understanding that money's not just numbers, it's a body-based, it's an emotional-based, it's a nervous-based system in ourselves. So we, and again, in that relationship, it's not just learning the technical side, it's learning how to manage money. So I always say, in order to manage money well, we need to manage ourselves well.
Yeah, definitely. That's so important to remember that, and across everything, you know, it's about everything. And this is why I love the We Are Women podcast topics. We can do mental health, emotional health, physical health, money health, business health, whatever it is. And we have such amazing people who've got the information to share that supports the community. How can people get in touch with you, Lee?
Absolutely. You can find me on my website, which is just my name, leeclothier.com. I'm also on social media, which you can also find through my website. Just anyone who would like to have a chat, I offer a free 20-minute session. I also have a archetype quiz on my website. So if you're curious to know what your archetype is, please jump on there and do the free quiz.
Fabulous. Is it under your name, the website, under Mindful Wealth?
It's under my name,
Yes.
leeclothier.com.
And all of the details will be in the show notes. It's just, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. I'm sure there's going to be lots of questions, and you've piqued people's interest as well, Lee, which is important just for people to even just start thinking about and start thinking about their relationship with money and be consciously aware of that they may not have to think the way they've always thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Janine. It's been my pleasure. It's so lovely to chat with you.
It's been wonderful. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you so much for joining us as one of my lovely subscribers and listeners. Remember to go to JanineVosper.com and book a strategy call if you have got any questions. You have a fantastic day, week, month, wherever you are in the world. And I look forward to you joining me next time on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.